Well, good afternoon. Thank you very, very much for asking me here today to speak to this important conference. As Australia's ambassador for the environment, it means that, among other things, I lead the officials' level delegations to international climate change negotiations. So I have a very interesting life, but given that we're in the election period and the government is in caretaker mode, I'm not going to be talking about any government policy issues today. I'm going to be making some brief remarks about the Asia-Pacific Partnership on Clean Development and Climate. For the sake of brevity, I'm going to refer to it as the partnership during this presentation, recognising, of course, that it isn't the only partnership that exists. I'd like to start by just outlining some key elements of the partnership and then giving some examples of the practical work that's being done under it. Let me start by saying that the partnership is consistent with and complements the Kyoto Protocol and the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. It's designed to strengthen efforts to meet the common objectives that all the members have. All the members of the partnership are members of the UN Climate Convention, and many of them are members also of the Kyoto Protocol. The partnership has some key characteristics. It engages the key economies in the Asia-Pacific region. It seeks to address climate change while recognising also the importance of economic development and energy security. It seeks to engage private sector very centrally in recognition of the fact that a lot of the technology and best practice issues, best practices are of course residing in firms and private sector entities and so therefore very key to deployment and diffusion of low emission technologies. This joint private-public sector partnership was formally established in January 2006 here in Sydney, as has already been mentioned. We had a large number of government and industry people from the then six countries, Australia, China, India, Japan, Republic of Korea and the United States. Quite a few people I see here today were also at that meeting, including Dr. Parikh, she's already mentioned. Last month, Canada joined the partnership. The seven countries now comprising the partnership represent about half world emissions, energy use, GDP and population. As has also been mentioned in other presentations, this group also comprises significant proportions of the world's coal, steel, aluminium and cement production and consumption. When we formed the partnership that was inaugurated here in Sydney, we came up with a new model, really, of bringing the public and private sector people together in a set of task forces in what we identified as the eight key sectoral areas. They're listed on the slide: aluminium, buildings and appliances, cement, cleaner fossil energy, coal mining, power generation and transmission, renewable energy and distributed generation, and steel. The task forces began their work with doing sectoral reviews, so overseeing the state of industries and technologies that were relevant to low emissions in those sectors, and really sitting around in a very hands-on way with government and industry people, identifying what the key areas were of relevance in the climate change and sustainable development area, and working out very precise project areas where everybody agreed we would all benefit from joining forces and working together. I think it's really quite fair to say that the central role of the business sector that sets the partnership apart from many other climate change forums, this really is quite a new model in that it is pursuing very real project-based activity aimed at reducing emissions and other forms of air pollution. The countries and the companies each bring their own resources and expertise to the partnership. It really is quite a true partnership in that everybody's learning from everybody else. So far, each of the task forces have had several meetings and various workshops on specific issues and specific projects, and every participating country, well, not Canada yet, but everybody else has hosted many of the meetings and the workshops. I think the political commitment to the partnership was from all of the countries was reaffirmed at the ministerial meeting hosted by India just a few weeks ago. I'd really like to acknowledge and welcome the leadership that the Indian government showed in hosting the meeting. We were very honoured to have the Foreign Minister as well as the Environment Minister, and very strong contribution from the Indian business sector as well at that meeting. The ministerial meeting endorsed the 110 projects that have been initiated since the Sydney meeting, and selected 18 kind of major projects that we're calling flagship projects, which exemplify what the partnership is all about. So to just give three examples, and I hope I'm still going to be quick. Firstly, one selected from the Cleaner Fossil Energy Task Force. Australia co-chairs this task force with China. One of the projects, and there are many, focuses on the post-combustion capture. It's being developed, this particular project is being developed by CSIRO. Many people here, of course, know, I'm not going to talk about it in great detail, but post-combustion capture is a really key clean coal technology because of the potential to retrofit existing state power stations. So the aim of this project, which is quite a big project, is to really spread the learning that we've each got in each of the countries on post-combustion capture technologies. CSIRO has this fantastic mobile pilot plant, which is huge piece of machinery with lots of pipes and looks very impressive. They can put it on the back of a semi-trailer and take it around to basically trial at different power stations that are generating, using different sorts of coals and generating different flue gases to work out the most efficient ways of separating the gases so that they'll be more concentrated for sequestration. We've got some pilot sites in Australia already identified, and a pilot site in China that has also been identified. Second example is from the Aluminium Task Force, which perhaps not coincidentally is also co-chaired by Australia with the United States. The project I wanted to talk about today involves Rio Tinto and the Australian Aluminium Council seeking to address perfluorocarbon emissions. PFCs form in the aluminium smelting process and have global warming potential several thousand times stronger than CO2 and very, very long atmospheric lifetimes. So reducing those emissions is really very important in the aluminium industry. Australian experience has been that we've been able to make quite significant reductions in those direct emissions, and the aim of this project is really to identify the technology and practices for reducing PFC emissions in all of the member countries. We're going to be undertaking training on implementing computer monitoring and quality control techniques disseminating best practice approaches. The Australian side is going to conduct a study tour of the Australian smelting operations pot room to demonstrate the reduced effects in a very, very direct way. A workshop was held in Beijing just a few months ago, which also identified some facilities in China that were going to conduct pilot demonstrations. So I think that's a really very concrete example of bringing the people together, sharing the best practices and learning and getting on with it. Last one, just quickly, Cement Task Force. Globally, cement industry emits about 2.2 billion tonnes of CO2 a year. The Cement Task Force has got a series of projects on everything from cogeneration to, all of the issues that come up in the cement industry in terms of sustainable development and emissions management. But the project I wanted to highlight today was the Cement Centre of Excellence project that is going to really be a clearinghouse and central way for best practices and knowledge to be spread right through the industry. I could go into more detail, but maybe given the time I'll just keep moving, because I wanted to just really pick up a point about financial incentives on the partnership that was made before. I think when you look through the very big range of projects that are underway in all of these task forces, and the Australian government put out a booklet a little while ago that sets out what the projects are that the Australian government is funding. There's about 100 of those, or part funding, I should say. But I think the really key thing is that the business people and not always private sector, including some state-owned industry people, come to these projects because they're mutually beneficial. It really is a voluntary basis, so no one's forced to do anything that they don't want to do. They come together because it's worth doing, because it's worth pooling expertise and finding the synergies in existing research efforts and pooling efforts to do more. As I say, the Australian government has contributed some seed funding to help that all those projects get started. $100 million has been allocated to projects so far, but I think it would be too narrow to really just look at government funding that's brought to bear, because there's a lot more to it than that. I'd like to just conclude by saying that I think there really are some key strengths in the partnership approach, the business involvement at central level being perhaps the most important, and I think it's also fair to say that the climate change challenge is large enough to warrant a variety of reinforcing approaches. So we're pleased to have been part of this new model, and we think it has great potential for really getting to work on all of the lots of different little issues that are going to make a difference over time. Thank you.